A lot of leaders and innovators talk about disrupting healthcare, but what does that really mean? And how does one actually do it? On Life-Centered Healthcare, we dive into these questions and more, talking to innovators who are leveraging Clay Christensen's theories to transform our healthcare ecosystem. I'm Ann Summers-Hogg, Director of Healthcare at the Clayton Christensen Institute, and I hope these stories help inspire you along your journey to transform health and care. Welcome back, listeners. We are recording this episode during Women's History Month, and today's guest is the perfect speaker to highlight both how far we've come and how far we still have to go when it comes to women's health. And as a healthcare innovator, you've likely noticed the uptick in women's health startups over the years. Additionally, the White House recently announced its initiative on women's health research and funding to support it. This is all great progress, but we still have a lot of progress to make. Despite these new models of care and wellness services that are entering the market, significant gaps in women's health still remain. If you're a woman, or even if you know one who has looked for health and care services, you likely understand that traditional women's health rarely matches a woman's desires for progress. Said differently, many products and services have not been developed with a demand-side perspective. The woman's desire for progress has not been the foundation upon which a company has been founded or products have been developed. But today's guest, Roma Vanderwalt, is seeking to change that with her company, Vitel. Roma, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yes, so excited to have you here. And before we dive in, I want to tell listeners a little bit about you. Mm-hmm. Roma is a former member of the German national team in modern pentathlon, one of the oldest Olympic sports. She spent almost a decade working at the UN in communications and celebrity relations, and left to develop a maternal health training methodology to support women and their partners on their reproductive journey. She is a sports scientist and the founder and CEO of Vitel, an AI augmented and data-driven platform that provides women 35 and over with insights and care coordination to support their health and longevity. Thank you so much for being here, Roma. Without further ado, let's dive in. I really like to start with why. Could you share why you started your company?
Yeah. So I gave you quite the mouthful with my bio, but I think it really shows you the two very formative experiences I've had in my life. So one was the athletic experience. As a young female athlete and having heard a lot of us have seen, like, female sports are finally getting the attention they deserve, but that wasn't always the case. And care for young female athletes hasn't necessarily been given in a way that respected that we have a reproductive system that usually develops further as we're going through the sport. So I went onto the national team in my coming of age years, very young. I was 15. So my body was coming into its own while it was being asked to do a lot of things. And I was very lucky to have an incredibly progressive male coach at the time who coordinated my training, but then also made sure that the people were supporting me from a mental health perspective, nutrition, orthopedic surgeons, massage, PT, all of that sort of went through him. But they also, if they needed to, coordinated with each other with the goal to make me an incredible athlete, but also to let me exit the sport in a way that was wholesome. You know, we hear of women who end up with life-changing injuries. Some women leave sports and they are mentally not who they could be. And so I feel really fortunate that, you know, many years on, that athletic career never had an effect on my reproductive journey. And then when I decided that I was ready to have children, I became what is dubbed a geriatric mother, or a woman of advanced maternal age, which was really funny because I was still very active, very athletic, and my OBGYN would giggle every time I walked in. I was 34, but due to give birth at age 35. And so I learned a lot in that short time span of how much more risk there is from the clinical perspective, and how, despite that, there are about 4 weeks between appointments, and there's all this white space where you have to figure everything out for yourself. And so between that age, knowing that then somewhere in my postpartum period, I was probably also going to encounter symptoms of perimenopause, I really wanted to have that experience for women that I had as an athlete, but now for women as they age, and again, their whole reproductive journey changes.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. And perhaps because my second was born a little less than a year ago, and I also fell into that advanced maternal age geriatric pregnancy bucket, it is odd how the medical system treats us. Inspiring that you created something to serve women a bit better. And it seems like you were driven to really serve this gap in the market, women who were looking for something, maybe you were one of them, that no one else was providing. And what is really the progress that your customers are seeking? What is it that they really want out of help from you?
Women 35 plus are our demographic overall. But I think the pain points that I just touched on is a pretty big part of that demographic, which are women who are dealing with young children at an older age than maybe historically. Women who are now also in that sandwich generation. So we're starting to deal with aging parents. Our body changes, our professional lives are different than generations before us. Everything is very hectic. And so there's obviously the clinical support. We've all learned through the pandemic that virtual care and telemedicine works really well. But there are many things that happen during that time where I think one asks oneself whether it actually warrants a doctor's appointment if you're not in need of a prescription or something that can be fixed in that moment, so in that 15-minute appointment. I think women are often, they soldier through a lot of things, so we also don't necessarily make appointments for ourselves as we would for anybody else in our family and our surrounding. And so most of that health happens at home. And women know intuitively they should sleep well, they should eat well, move, and then, you know, take care of their mental health. But, you know, where do you even begin? And if you chose to have children, that question becomes an even bigger one because now you've gone through this transformative experience. During pregnancy is incredibly daunting. And then post-pregnancy, your body is broken. You know, there's a lot of pieces you have to put back together to build a foundation from which to be healthy again. So I think the progress really happens in these small ways. It's either somebody stays more consistent in areas that then allow them to do the things they really love to do. So if somebody's able to do a few exercise snacks, as we refer to them, then that might lead to engaging in a bigger, like either setting a bigger goal or start, you know, going back to a sport that they really enjoy. Mindfulness is a big topic that we see when we surveyed women. 70% of women said that there was nothing in place for them. And, you know, we unlocking that, obviously, it just doesn't just benefit the individual, it benefits everybody around them as well. We look at the four pillars of health. So aside from mindfulness and exercise, we look at nutrition and then we look at sleep. And then sleep, you know, again, I don't need to tell a mother this. That's its own beast, and hormones do their thing to make that a more tricky thing to figure out.
Thanks for explaining that. And so do you find that, you mentioned 70% of women say they don't really have anything in place for the mindfulness component of it. But when women come to you, is it that they're already aware of these four pillars of health and they're seeking help to do them better? Are they coming to you because they are recovering from a postpartum experience, and as you said, they may feel broken or like things just aren't in place? What are the pain points or the pushes of their environment that you feel bring them to your door, your virtual door?
The biggest thing is often not one incident, but it's more of a, can you just take care of this for me? Like there's the mental load of taking care of everyone and everything around them. But then, you know, I think the aging process, and often it's age 40, again, regardless of pregnancies or not, is this big birthday where you start thinking about how you actually want to age. And I think a lot of us are now so health literate that, and we're seeing so many people talk about this topic, that there's part vanity and there's part, you know, the aspiration of being able to put your suitcase in the overhead compartment when you're 70 or be able to still squat down, that I think a lot of women realize they need to start tackling in their 40s. And then there's that feeling of overwhelm, like there's a lot of information. How does that relate to me? The personalization piece is a huge one, part because, you know, a person might sleep really, really well, but might need help switching their brain off during the day. So personalization, we're seeing it in concierge medicine, we're seeing it in precision medicine. We're not seeing enough of it based on what the person needs and then also how it fits into their lifestyle. I'm a really big proponent of the lived experience. So I'm a scientist, but I also think, you know, if I just hit people over the head with the jargon and the metrics and the data, I think in particular for women during that stage in their life, it's just too much. Like they literally go, here, just look at this graph and tell me what to do with it.
Yeah, the help me know what to do with the science is very different from help me understand the science.
Yes.
So thanks for explaining that. You know, the You really pointed at something that I think is a critical difference, not only in terms of women are having children later, but there's this health literacy, and maybe a better word for it would be wellness literacy, or just overwhelm of wellness information that women have today that I would imagine adds to the stress and burnout of, I know I should be doing all of these things, but how do I do that? Or I don't possibly have the time to do it. So how is it that you address these needs? How do you provide the personalization? How do you really help women achieve this desire for progress that at times seems overwhelming?
We try, I think, and a big area that we're looking to move away from is asking people how they feel. We try and become like, we're trying to quantify as much data as we can to then be able to correlate it within the individual's life, but also anonymized between women so that we can start seeing trends and patterns that allow us to interact with women when it's actually meaningful. So in an onboarding, when we ask somebody how they assess their own pillars of health, there's a scale of 1 to 10. And we basically look at that at the beginning, and then we have check-ins where we go, have we moved that needle or have we not moved that needle? So making progress for us in that way then is like, creates like one level of data that can start relating to other parts of that data. And again, it's all about, so we look at biometrics, they just run in the background. And again, something a lot of people now use wearables. A lot of the apps are very data heavy without being personalized and without actually telling you what to do with it in a way that fits into your lifestyle. So I've asked women to pull their median resting heart rate for the previous week from their Oura Ring. And they go, where do I even begin? So on the app that we've built, there's a very simple to see, you know, there's just one area that says, okay, this is value one, value two, value three. And it's in a way that we actually would use it in our life, and it helps women. And then, you know, we build feedback loops where we tell women how that's behaved in the previous week and how we think they should adjust their lifestyle based on that. And so then when we measure progress, we measure that by either improving or eliminating symptoms of perimenopause. And some of them are relevant to perimenopause. Some of them are, honestly, right now are just lifestyle problems. So if somebody has unexplained fatigue, it doesn't matter if they're 33 and not perimenopausal or if they're 43 and suspect that they're perimenopausal. Unexplained fatigue is awful. So we would look at something like, where are they in their menstrual cycle? Does this make sense or doesn't make sense? If it makes sense, that's already empowering because now they're not beating themselves up. So then we work on turning that day around. If it's during a part of their cycle where that doesn't make sense because they should be firing on all cylinders, then we dig in deeper and we look at other parts of the data that I mentioned to see what bridges we can build to then, again, help them turn around, if not that day, hopefully the following days.
You mentioned that you're looking to move away from asking people how they feel. And as you talk about your service, it's clear that you're serving a lot of emotional needs or a lot of emotional desires for progress. And in fact, one of the things you said towards the end of the response was, you're helping women not beat themselves up by giving them this data. So help me understand how not asking them how they feel helps to address these emotional desires, or what we would say in theory language, these emotional components of jobs to be done.
So if you look at most trackers right now, they have a lot of smiley faces, like anywhere between 4 and 8. And I think that our emotions and how we feel about certain situations fluctuate a lot during the day. And it's also then open to interpretation. So if I woke up this morning and I felt really anxious. So on a scale of emojis, I didn't feel so great, but that was momentary. And then, you know, my day went on. I'm actually really happy to be here and I feel good. If I had seen a doctor this morning at that moment, then I would have not felt great. Or if I'd logged my information this morning on an app, I would have felt really bad. I may not go back to that app again in the day. And then that day for me gets logged as not great. The effect that that has, because it's subjective, it also influences how we're treated. I do think that if you go to a doctor's appointment and how you feel it might actually affect how the doctor responds to you or the provider responds to you. And obviously then their response is also subjective. I obviously want people to express how they feel, but I think if we can send people into doctor's appointments with notes that speed up that appointment because everybody knows exactly what they're working with. So if I can send a woman in and say, hey, in the last 7 days, this person slept really great on, you know, last Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then not so great on Sunday and Monday. And we also saw that show up in their resting heart rate. It looks like they're really stressed. That's probably more to work with, especially if you look at it over 2 weeks and you just go, the person comes in, they go, I have unexplained fatigue. Well, you've not slept well. Your resting heart rate is through the roof. Then we would look at maybe how's their nutrition going? Have they moved? And then, you know, I think we can draw better conclusions from that than just saying, hey, how do you feel today? Like I'm trying to move away from just isolating the emotion and looking at several other data points and bringing them all together. And then when you said, you know, the outcome for the person is still emotional, I think improved quality of life is empowering. And within the range of emotions right now, I think this is the only one I want to affect. Yeah. Like if we can get people to move more and they didn't know where to begin and that helps them feel better, that's fantastic. But on the app currently, we don't ask people about that.
I imagine some sort of dissatisfaction drives customers to your service. We've talked about some of them, but what is it about, or what do you hear from women that they dislike about current solutions that's driven them to come to you, apart from maybe the lack of personalization?
The mainstream media and a lot of the communication about perimenopause and menopause tells us that there's up to 100 symptoms of that stage in life. So if there's up to 100 symptoms, how on earth are we going to go to the doctor for every single symptom? And is it warranted to go to the doctor for every single symptom? So I think women really like the idea. They're hearing so much about longevity, which we don't really separate, but we see perimenopause and menopause as part of that journey. They hear a lot about that now more in like the mainstream, so podcasts and social media, and that area is completely dominated by male voices. So I think there's definitely a big part of women that says it'd be so nice to, well, the fact that you're only catering to female bodies and you understand that our bodies are different and you are looking at the things that are tangible that are changing in my life, that's a big draw. I think this idea of rolling your trainer, your nutritionist, your sleep consultant, and your mindfulness person all into one and then applying them specifically to you as you're aging, that's really attractive. And then the perimenopause portion is really where we go. These symptoms will happen in some shape and form. So when you track them, we'll help you eliminate them. And I'm happy to give you an example. One example of a symptom that was really exciting for us because we fixed it with lifestyle and it was kind of a surprise to us too.
That would be great. Because actually my next question is around, tell me more about how your model works. Like who do women interact with? How do they interact? What progress do they track? Things like that. So yes, talking through an example would be awesome.
Right now we're in beta. So we've released the app and we have a remote monitoring platform. We're encouraging people to come sign up for free and test the beta with us. And we will be launching the paid product in August, September. The beta works in two ways for us. Right now, we obviously want to make sure that everybody's really happy with the product. I think we're 80% there. And then the other part is also that with some of this data, I think we can also push research forward. So the way it works right now is that we either have people sign up individually or people sign up through a partner. When we work with partners, they're virtual care providers and quite often they're specialized and we create the framework around it. So if somebody specializes in mental health, then we want to be able to show them how that person that they're working with is living the rest of their life because it's going to have an influence on that specialty. But also it creates more of a loyalty, it creates more of an integration with their product because we cannot continue to have like a provider here and then our lifestyle here and not start creating that care coordination. And that's also super attractive to partners. So we've had a lot of interest for that and people, I think, specialty providers understand that the way forward is by integrating holistic and clinical. When people sign up individually, right now we've encouraged them to sign up either through an accountability pod that we put them in, match them with, or through like friendship groups. So we've had like 20 people sign up together because they want to do the testing, which is 4 weeks together. And that's really fun because if you have other people in your community, then doing some of the things that you agreed to do is a little bit easier. And then, as I said, we start with a radical self-assessment of where your pillars of health are on a scale of 1 to 10. There's a few other questions. And then you can either use the app self-led and AI augmented, where, you know, you have that feedback loop with an automated email at the end of the week that tells you what you did well and where you need a little bit more help. Or you can also have a check-in with a health coach, which is a video call at the beginning, and then there's chat support. And that's the more popular version, because again, I think it's really just, it's like a coach in any other area of your life. They'll figure it out and they'll also hold you accountable. So I'll give you a really funny example. So a person came in and said, you know, I want to test this. I'm pretty healthy. I do all these things. You know, she fell into a category that we're all familiar with, which is career plus children, big city, and everything that life throws at you when you're in that realm. And she says, I just haven't been sleeping well and I get night sweats. So is this the beginning? And we're like, yeah, you know, it could be. So we observed for probably a couple of weeks, maybe 4 weeks. And then we realized that her night sweats were only occurring during PMS. So that was the first thing that already for her was empowering, because she was able to go, okay, this isn't random. This is like one time. And the reason we saw that was that her resting heart rate was shooting up the day before PMS and then would go back into range on the first day of her menstruation. So, by the way, this area is, I want to get 20,000 women who have that, you know, like I want to see 20,000 women who have that signification to then see how we can help them with symptoms that then happen at the same time. So for her, it was night sweats. I've since heard that several times more, but we've also seen that jump in resting heart rate, not just in her. So we said, okay, now that we know that this is literally a 3-day period, let's cut out caffeine and cut out high intensity interval training and alcohol. And of course, she was like, forever? And we said, no, not forever, for 3 days. She goes, okay, like that I can do, you know, what do I do? So we're like, well, if you must have the taste of coffee, why don't you do decaf? But if you really want to see where you can go, if you go off caffeine, maybe try any alternative. So I have a turmeric latte, I have a matcha. We all love our coffee. So that wasn't, she wasn't too happy about it. Alcohol, I think, again, it's 3 days. It's not a big deal. And then, so we touched on every pillar of health. We said no high intensity interval training because it just stresses the body more. And the funniest bit of this was, what are you currently doing for mindfulness? Not that much. Like, what do you think you can agree to? Well, not meditation. It doesn't, you know, it's not, the progress is not as quick, and also wasn't her personality. So it was really important for us to find something that she could actually implement. So we said, how about you foam roll every night? So you get the gunk out of your body. You foam roll, you do that for 5 to 10 minutes. This is your way of like shutting off the day, shutting off your brain, and then you go to bed. By month 2, she had reduced her night sweats by 50%. And by month 3, she had an entire PMS cycle without night sweats. And so as a follow-on effect, she slept through the night. You know, she didn't have to get up, change her clothes, or change her sheets. She didn't wake up her partner. She didn't wake up and was completely wrecked 3 days in a row and then have to, you know, because then you overconsume your coffee. Then you add in more sugar to get more energy, and it's detrimental. I remember someone saying to me, well, it's just night sweats. You know, how hard is it to change like your t-shirt? But it has such a cascading effect on everything else in your life, even if it's just the 3 days, that, you know, even if that person now falls out of that habit, for the first day, she'll go, okay, I remember. And so, but that's where we can build in automation and prediction with AI, because now we can send her a dedicated personalized notification that says, hey, heads up, PMS is coming for you. That means X, Y, and Z.
What a story of empowerment.
Yeah.
Wow. I think that's what I take away from that story of success, is you really empowered her, not only with information, because in telling that story, you pointed out how, because she knew it was sparked by PMS, it sounded as though that reduced her anxiety off the bat, because it at least gave her an answer for why she was experiencing this. And then also the empowerment for what to do about it, tailoring it to the specific time where it was going to make the biggest difference. And the answer to this, I even paused before asking this question, because I think there probably isn't research on this because women are so under-researched, but I didn't realize there was a correlation between rising heart rate and menstruation onset. Is that actually something that the literature has looked at, or is this new to you?
This was new to me. And I really hope that this is like I would love to contribute to that kind of research. We have another research partnership with the university in a different area, also perimenopause. But this is one, for me, I'm obsessed with resting heart rate as a metric of health. You know, like, I think it makes total sense. PMS often goes, well, PMS coincides with progesterone going down. So we lose our, like, ability to withstand stress. And then, you know, you have cortisol levels rising. And then you often have pain. So resting heart rate being a marker for inflammation, it does make a lot of stress. And it does make a lot of sense. So I need to dig deeper into whether there are any studies, but seeing this even in preliminary data, and I told an advisor of mine about it, and like, this is the kind of thing that really excites me, because it is 100% quantitative data, and then we can act. And, you know, in the absence of having like one drug that is going to take care of night sweat specifically, I think being able to give people that power to work around a symptom that is so linked to menopause would be great. And I'm not saying like her life is going to go up and down, but I think the beauty of a platform like this is that the protocol adapts. And then if she doesn't need help in this area, it might be help with something else. So I have a few of these examples. Some of them are really hilarious, but they all end in the same thing, which is like ultimately more power to her to be a better version of herself. And then, like, you know, show up as a better version for her community, for her partner, for her children, for her work. And I do it for myself too. Like, I think sometimes the app surprises me. I was traveling for a conference and the app sent me my heads up PMS message. And, you know, just knowing that I was going to speak publicly and be a little less resilient to stress, plus air travel, plus I had no menstrual products at home. So that was actually a very practical application where I just ran to the shop because I was flying out at 6 a.m. the next day and I did not have one of those goes to the airport bathroom. Oops, don't have anything on hand. So that was awesome.
The predictive power is also empowering, it sounds like. Two more quick questions and then I'll wrap us up. We started this podcast season with a series on leaders and what it was about their schools of experience, the experiences they'd had in their career that made them effective leaders in healthcare. So as a founder, I want to build off some of those discussions and ask you, as a founder, what do you know now that you wish you'd known when you started Vitell?
Ignorance is bliss when you start out as a founder. You know, I apply a lot of my athletic lessons to this journey. I think I was just discussing this with a Black male founder who said, you know, if you think about the statistics, you won't be building the startup. And it's so, you know, statistics for female founders, statistics for underrepresented founders. I think one big learning curve for me was just to not, I can't think about how much funding goes to that. I think I'm very much driven by purpose. And to me, most of the leaders that I look up to, or most of the people who are really good in their field, when that shines through, that's probably why I follow them or love to listen to them. So I think my entire career, I joke that this culminated in this. So I did the athletic part, learned what my body could do at the very top of it. I was probably humbled by the motherhood part. Well, but again, I went in and I thought, I'm an athlete. So in delivery, my obstetrician said to me, oh, the fastest I've ever seen a woman deliver her baby was in 2 pushes. And my husband just kept mouthing at her, do not tell me that. You do not unlock my competitive spirit. He goes, no. And so she looked at me and she got really stern. And she said, like a good coach, she goes, that woman got a 4th degree tear aroma. Like, you are not trying to like compete with her. And I complied, and it was definitely not 2 pushes, but it's, you know, again, maybe that's also taps into, I really love people who can teach me something more. Motherhood taught me everything from how to not care as much, that also comes with age, show up authentically, surrender. So again, in this journey, I think there's a lot of surrendering, taking it day by day. So yeah, I think I'm really happy to be on this journey. There are so many fascinating people, so many fascinating women building this space right now. I really hope we can get everybody out of their silos little by little and start closing that gap, you know, between research and lived experience, between virtual care, like clinical care, and then holistic care. And I have a feeling that's like starting to emerge. And if it's going to emerge anywhere, I think it'll be women's health.
My last question for you today is, how can listeners learn more about your offering? How can they learn more about this? How can they get involved?
We have a website. So it's www.vitel.co. We will be launching the onboarding soon, where based on the onboarding, we'll match people to groups where they have a similar area that they want to work on, because I think it's important that people feel that within that community, they're supported. Like, it doesn't make sense if I'm working on my mindfulness and you're working on your nutrition that we're in the same pod. I mean, it could be, but I think it's good to know the pain points that people are going through specifically at the beginning. I'm very active on LinkedIn, which is how we met. So always encourage people to reach out or DM me. We're active as a company on Instagram. You know, social media is a love-hate relationship, but if people are looking for like little sound bites, or even we've posted some exercises for people if they don't know where to begin with their resistance training. So we're active on there. And yeah, if people want to email us, it's hello@vitel.co.
Awesome. Roma, thank you so much for explaining that. And thank you for being here today. Thank you for sharing all about Vitel with us. And just a couple things I want to reiterate that I heard from you that I hope listeners will take away from this conversation. The first one is, it seems as though part of what you're providing is well-being for women by women. So really understanding what it is that women come to you seeking. You're addressing the struggling moments of new life phases, whether that be postpartum or perimenopause or menopause. You're closing the gaps in research. You're closing the gaps in women's understandings of themselves. And it sounds as though you're doing this through personalization, adaptation, empowerment, and fulfillment. So thank you for the work you are doing, for adding to the landscape solutions to help women live their best lives. And it was really exciting to learn more about it. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Life Centered Healthcare. If you like what you heard, please leave a review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And for more of the latest in healthcare, check out our website, christensininstitute.org. You can sign up for our newsletter and read our latest industry insights. Until next time, have a wonderful day, everyone.